Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denson. What a weekend it was. Yes, you missed Friday's show. I didn't know you didn't miss it. I just didn't do one. Had things to do. Had to get ready for what went on this weekend with the tournament. Had the weekly show that I do, my missing persons program. Needed to get that out early on Friday because of that. Just things just kind of add up after a while. But I'm back. But you should know, though, this coming Friday, I'm also going to miss this coming Friday as well for kind of the same reasons, but that will be a travel day. I am driving to Orlando, Florida to play in the tournament over there Saturday and Sunday. But so I'm looking forward to that. This past weekend, if you care, it was hot. It must have been 90 degrees out, and it was so windy. It must have been 25 to 30 mile per hour winds, and the course we're playing on, at least on the back part of it, has a lot of water. And didn't shoot as well as I hoped to, but I could have never predicted the conditions that would be there. I went out there on Friday afternoon, and there was virtually no wind, virtually zero. And shot pretty well. Played the course, shot well, felt good about it. Did in about 2 hours, felt good. I show up there on Saturday morning, and it was 30 mile per hour winds in a really strange direction for that course. Coming out of like the southeast, there was like this crossed wind going, and everybody was having problems. Everybody's going in the water. And so I made a prediction of what I would shoot. I ended up shooting 13 strokes worse. But that's over 75 holes. It was 25 round holes per round. And I think about it now, and it's really not that bad, considering. And I made some stupid mistakes, missed some putts. I'm guessing I could have probably shot maybe 6 or 7 strokes better, realistically. Realistically, I missed a couple putts that I really should have hit. And that cost me. But really, I played advanced. I think I played well. I easily won my card the last day, the last round, by, 4 strokes. So I felt good about that. I saw a lot of other good players who are better than I am having a lot of problems. So I didn't feel too bad about it. But I got through it, and I was probably easily the oldest guy in my division, playing against guys like not just half of my age, but maybe what would it be? Maybe 2/5 my age. Like, I was playing against like 15-year-olds, 1/3 my age, maybe. And some good young kids and everything, and I held my own. So, what are you gonna do? But it was hot. I mean, it was something. It won't be as hot, I don't think, in Orlando. And plus, there's a lot more shade at the Turkey Lake Parks. But I got through it. I shot higher than my PDGA rating, which is all I guess I can ask for at this point. So there you go. Finished. What did I finish? I finished 12th out of 22. I really can't complain about that. Given everything that went down, just can't complain. But I feel great today. I really do. Even playing 50 rounds on Saturday, 25 rounds yesterday, feel great. In fact, I'm probably going to go out and throw some this afternoon. So let's get to the show. What else went on this weekend was the Correspondents' Dinner. And anybody who has been listening to this program since it started on Red State Talk Radio knows how I feel about it. And maybe it's just me, but I get the feeling that year after year, more and more people are coming to my side of the argument. That's a perception I have. And there aren't many things in life that I can say that about. It seems like too many people have been moving away from me, at least regarding politics. Too many people moving away from the way I think and not toward the way I think. You can take that for what it's worth. But I think there was a time, for a long time, that the Correspondents' Dinner, it was just happened and everybody enjoyed it and people, your average citizen, wanted to know about it. And I think what has happened is, as soon as the internet started, and as soon as there was like 24/7 news cycle, and then you mix in social media, you mix in Instagram, you mix in Twitter and everything else, and at some point within all of that, it gets to be too much. And people start seeing, your average citizen starts maybe seeing behind the curtain, because I think that's what you see a lot of times with people's Instagram accounts, Twitter accounts, that they may be one way out in public, but then something behind the scenes. And it maybe is kind of ugly, you could say. People not what people expect. So I think that's part of it, that arrogance, and people tend to lash out on Twitter and social media when they should just keep their mouth shut. I think that that's meant something. But I also think that since September 11th, since 9/11, and since that day, the United States has been at war with terrorists, even though it's not the kind of war that we normally think of. I think people today, when they think of war, they think automatically think World War II. They think of Vietnam. They think of tanks and front lines and, video after video after video of bombings. And it's not like that. There are, even in our, what the limited capacity that we're using right now with boots on the ground in Afghanistan, I mean, you could go for weeks without seeing one video of any firefight or anything like that. But since September 11th, we have been fighting terrorists. We've been trying to kill terrorists. And we know everything we've done going into Afghanistan, going to Iraq, dealing with ISIS, dealing with Al-Qaeda, all of this. And I think since that started, this correspondence dinner has become more and more ugly to people. That you have all these people dressed, the women dressed in elegant gowns. You have the men dressed in tuxedos. You have the president of the United States. You have all these people there who are major players, people who make big decisions in our country. And then you have the people who are covering them in every other day of the year that they're supposed to be at each other's throats. That's the way it should be. And I know we as conservatives, we debate that every day, it seems. But there they are, they're yucking it up, getting along as if the other 364 days of the year never happened. And there's a reason that at some point this became known as the nerd prom. That politics, I don't know who came up with this idea, but it said politics is Hollywood for ugly people. And I know Rush Limbaugh has said that a lot, but I don't think he's the one who started that. But I think that terminology and those pejorative, or those negative words about the correspondence dinner started, I believe, after 9/11. I don't really remember, and I follow politics going back to my teenage years, that I don't remember it being talked about as derisively as it is now. And it seems, once again, this is one of those topics where it seems more and more people are finally coming to my side. And I've been on this side virtually since 9/11. That there's something wrong to me, that all these people, these decision makers, these people who are supposed to be reporting on these wars and everything that's going on in the world, they're getting together, yucking it up, and then some Marine is sleeping in mud over in Iraq or Afghanistan. I'm not saying that that Marine or that soldier shouldn't be there. You know my attitude toward all of that. But there should be no laughing and no joking around and all of that amongst these people who either make the decisions that man or woman is sleeping in the mud, or the people who are reporting that should be there doing this are in Washington, D.C., yucking up with these people who are making decisions. It's all so ugly. Now, I know that this isn't the way it's supposed to be. I realize that when this correspondence dinner was started decades and decades ago, it was a different time. It just was. We didn't have a 24/7 news cycle. You didn't know about these people behind the scenes. And if people got news going, about World War II or the Korean War, Vietnam War, it wasn't like it could be beamed. Yes, there was some video, but most of it was done on film, and then it had to be developed, and then it had to be shipped to the United States or beamed somehow, played somehow to everybody. It wasn't instantaneous. And many times the American people didn't find out about some major battle or some major victory to 2-3 days after it happened. But now that everything is instantaneous and you can flip from one station and maybe see something about what's going on in Afghanistan or with, you know, what's going on in Syria, for example, and then flip to the next station and live is the Correspondents' Dinner. Both of the channels are live and you can see both. You start wondering, why are these people joking around? Why is there a comedian up there? Why are they making fun of each other? Because there's nothing funny about any of this. They shouldn't be laughing at all. I'm not saying they're not allowed to have fun in their lives or humor in their lives, and they're not allowed to relax in their lives. But a get-together is for the express purpose of getting along, and pretending that that stuff doesn't even exist is disgusting. It's disgusting. And I don't know if they know it and do it anyway, or are they just really that clueless as to how it all looks? And that's why I told you, if I ever became president, the first thing that I would do is somehow make that thing stop. Which brings me to the next point. Donald Trump didn't show up for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I don't know the last time a president didn't show up. Maybe this is the first time the president of the United States didn't show up. But it's one of those things. There was that saying, what's the greatest treason? To do the right thing for the wrong reason. This is the way I feel regarding Donald Trump. And this is why I say he is a man who lacks character, lacks the ability to send out a coherent message and stick by it and to inspire people. All he does is get angry. Now, what was the reason he didn't show up? He didn't show up because he didn't want to be made fun of. Had nothing to do with it just looking bad. The Correspondents' Dinner didn't have anything to do with what my argument is meant, that we shouldn't have politicians yucking it up in parties and everything, as long as there are men and women in the armed forces who take orders from these politicians who are over there suffering. You know, this is my attitude. That's not Donald Trump's attitude. He didn't show up. I told you, if I was president, I wouldn't show up. But I wouldn't show up because I would make that point. I'd have a little speech from the White House the day of the Correspondents' Dinner stating why I'm not going. And it would be, I think it looks bad and I think it's disgusting that people who hold power in this country, whether it's an elected position or in a position of telling the citizens in the United States what's going on in the world, that they get together and yuck it up while our men and women are defending us and we're yucking it up. That's what would be my statement. Would only take a couple minutes to do. But Donald Trump, he can't get to that. Because, once again, everything is all about Donald Trump. And once all of you figure that out, his presidency is going to make a lot more sense to you. It's all about him. In fact, I was just reading a story, maybe it was last Thursday or Friday, about, you know, what would Trump do if all this, what he's doing as president starts to hurt his businesses? What do you think he would do? We know what he would do. He would do things to help his businesses and not to help the United States. That's what we know. And we know, for all of you people who voted for him, you know that. You know that. But here Donald Trump had an occasion. He has billed himself as being different than every president before him, especially different than Barack Obama or George W. Bush. And in that way, yes, he didn't go to the Correspondents' Dinner just like in contrast to them going to everyone. But he couldn't come out and make a statement about it. Because I don't think that ever occurs to him. Does not, because he's too caught up and he doesn't want to sit there and have people make fun of him. This just shows you how weak of a man he is. And as I've told you, the North Koreans, they may be backward, and it may be a hermit kingdom. And Kim Jong-un may, I don't think he's crazy. I think he probably knows exactly what he was doing. He just may push it a little too far. But the Chinese and the Russians and everything else, they know exactly who Donald Trump is. And this, I think I had made this point a while ago. I don't know if it was before or after Donald Trump got elected. But I think the way the voters saw Donald Trump is very different from how the Chinese and the Russians, Vladimir Putin and North Koreans, the Iranians viewed Donald Trump. I think to your average American citizen who voted for Donald Trump, they think of him as a tough guy. They think of him as a hard ass. They think of him as a guy who won't take any crap from anybody and everything. But I know that's not the way the Chinese and the Russians, those people in those countries, they know what hard is. They know it. Why do they know it? Because that's how they lead. We can make all the, we know what goes on in China. We know. It is not the United States. They don't believe in rights or anything like that. We know what they do to Christian groups. We know what they do to all sorts of types. They know what hard is, who tough people are. The Russians, the same way. They are hard, hard people. And I'm not saying we as Americans aren't tough. We have. We've shown over and over throughout history that we're pretty tough as well. The difference, I think, today is that we fall for the marketing a little too much. And I think this is influenced by Donald Trump and his business life, Donald Trump in his TV shows, his TV show, in which he did very well. People see that and they think that is who he really is. And I don't think it is. I think he's a cheat. I don't think you'd ever want to be in a contract with Donald Trump. And some people think that that's good. Whereas these other people in these other countries, they know what hard is. They know what tough is. And they don't see that in Donald Trump. They see a guy who, if he was in their country, they would have him under their thumb in a second. Because they know exactly what makes Donald Trump tick. Whereas I'm not convinced the people who voted for Donald Trump understand that at all. And the people who didn't vote him just are going to despise him anyway. They weren't going to vote for probably any Republican anyway. And see, and that's the difference I see between Donald Trump and George W. Bush. As much as I know that George W. Bush isn't a conservative, the way I look at George W. Bush is I think he is a hard guy. I don't think that you'd want to mess with George W. Bush. Whereas, and if you had to pick between George W. Bush or Donald Trump in a foxhole somewhere, who would you pick? You know who you would pick. You know it. Even though Donald Trump got more votes than George W. Bush did, even though the Bushes are known as the milquetoast and everything else, you know who you'd pick. Because that's based on character, it's not based on policy. I think that's the way the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians and North Koreans and everybody look at Donald Trump. I think they actually might have been a little bit afraid of George W. Bush. I'm not convinced they're afraid of. They know what makes Donald Trump tick. And they know all the buttons to push. Why? Because Donald Trump puts them out there for everybody to see. And if Donald Trump thinks that going back to his days of cheating on contracts and everything else and being corrupt here and corrupt there, he, you know, what are we in? 3-4 months into his presidency? You wait. Until the Chinese, you want to talk about corruption. You want to talk about turning the tables on people. The Chinese government are experts at that. The Russian government, experts on that. The Iranians, experts on that. So this is everything that comes to mind when I start thinking about this correspondence dinner and why I think that Donald Trump isn't as great as all of you have made him out to be. He had an opportunity here to make a point, a very, very good moral point about this correspondence dinner. Didn't. The fact is he didn't go because he didn't want to be made fun of. Barack Obama went, George W. Bush went, Bill Clinton went, Ronald Reagan went, and then Donald Trump ducks out because he can't stand it. And this is something, and I realize that going back to the primaries, it seems that those candidates who try to attack him on that seem to have suffered. I guess the first person that thinks that way is Marco. I think of as Marco Rubio, who went after him like that. Maybe paid for it. I don't know. Seemed to do okay in his reelection campaign in Florida, so I don't know how much it really hurt him. And he did get more votes here in Florida than Donald Trump did. But one of the other primary candidates going after Donald Trump in that way is certainly different than China or Iran or Russia or the North Koreans going after Donald Trump like that. And I wonder and I worry that that kind of attack would probably do more to hurt the United States than anything else. They start making fun of him, he gets ticked off, and then he starts shooting missiles because he doesn't like himself being attacked. As long as they're not making fun of him, maybe he's perfectly fine with it. And I can't help but tell you, this is kind of the way I think. And I just wonder where this is all going to go. I don't know. I don't know what kind of ratings the correspondence dinner gets. C-SPAN covers it, right? C-SPAN is the covers it every year. I, as you know, I've never watched it. I've seen some clips. I've seen some over the years of it. You know, Seth Meyers and whoever else hosted it. But that is about it, and I don't like it. The self-congratulatory atmosphere of it should upset all Americans on either side. This, you know, the correspondence dinner is something that we should all be able to get together on, conservatives and liberals, and say, this needs to end. It needs to end today. Shouldn't have it for April 2018. But I'm guessing that one way or another, they'll figure out a way to have it again, even if Donald Trump says he won't show up again. I can only hope, and you know my expectations for Donald Trump are very, very, very low. But I can only hope that if he chooses to not show up there next year, that he happens to make the reason what I'm talking about here. That it's just wrong for everybody to show up like this when Americans are suffering in other countries because of the orders that they had to follow from their politicians. Just a thought. Just a thought. Let's move on to something else, and this is something that is kind of tangential to the correspondence dinner, and it was Bob Woodward, and it's kind of funny that this is a complete coincidence, but yesterday evening after I got back from the disc golf tournament, I only had to play one round. We started at, 9:15? I think we were done by about 12:30. Got home, got a shower, turned the air conditioning down to about 60 degrees, just chilled my apartment out big time, and I had to do some work on my other show. And I put in All the President's Men, because despite it being about the taking down a Republican president, I actually enjoy that. Even though it's Dustin Hoffman, liberal, and Robert Redford, kook, 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 liberal, I actually really do enjoy that movie. I really do. So it's weird I watched that, and then I saw this article about Bob Woodward, and what he said, that, you know, for all the media, we shouldn't be, the media shouldn't be applauding itself too much, considering that the, you know, the media in this country, its polling numbers are down there just right above the average American's opinion of Congress. Why do you think that is? I mean, and for the numbers to get that low, it's not just all conservatives who are answering a poll like that. You know what? There are a lot of liberals who don't like the media in this country as well. And this is one more reason why I think that we as conservatives have overplayed this entire thing regarding the liberal media and how much it sucks. Because what we don't realize is, you know what? There are a lot of liberals who watch the media and think it sucks as well. Maybe for different reasons, but nobody likes it. So it's not like, you know, what we hear is obvious, or what we hear, see and hear from the media, the major media in this country, is obviously different from what your average liberal sees and hears. Because we're hearing, we see the same people, we hear the same words, but we hate it for one reason, they hate it for a completely other reason. Even though we think it's the kind of message that liberals love, there's enough evidence out there and studies and polls and everything to know they don't like it either. And this is why I continue to say that all this attacking the media has, and the damage it has done, is overestimated by a huge, far amount. It's not, we, you know, we think of it as like the nuclear device. We start talking about the media, then everybody will suddenly see, oh my gosh, it's right. They're right. The media is so liberal and conservatives are exactly right. It's not that way, because there's a lot of liberals who don't like the media either. So that's why I think when the attacking of the media started in the early 1990s by Rush Limbaugh and others, and we thought that it was going, I think back then we thought it was going to be, once again, some cure-all, some silver bullet, some perfect pill to cure everything. I don't think any of these people 25 years later could have imagined they'd be making the same arguments, but they are. And nowhere in that time have they ever thought, you know what, this liberal media biased argument, although it may be true, it doesn't seem to work very well. Liberals keep getting votes. People keep watching. We had Barack Obama president for 8 years. Democrats still win elections. Hillary Clinton almost became president. And we still convince ourselves that people are convinced of liberal media bias. Well, the liberals are watching the same thing. They don't like it either. So how liberal is it? You should think about that. But Bob Woodward has a point that, you know, the media poll numbers are in the crapper too, and he can't understand why all these reporters walk around and they're so smug. I read those words and I feel the same way about conservative media. I feel the same way about Rush, and I've just gotten to this point over a multitude of years. It wasn't necessarily overnight. I'm 46 years old, going to be 47 way too soon now. Exact, it's May 1st today. I got 3 months until I'm 47. Hard to believe. I look great, though. And I feel great. Feel great after playing disc golf this weekend. But it's been over many years that I now notice that conservative media people are just as smug, as self-congratulatory, so willing to slap themselves on the back and everything, just like the liberal media is. It's what, no matter where it comes from, it's all wrong. So when I hear Bob Woodward talking about this, I know there are going to be many conservatives going to say, see, that's CNN, then MSNBC, see, they're too self-congratulatory, their poll numbers are in a crapper. This is all media. This includes you. The people that are going to point this out probably today on all sorts of shows that you're going to listen to, they're going to look at it from a conservative point of view, and he says, yeah, that little arena there's too. It's all of it. They're all self-important dunces. Reading off teleprompters, making the same cliched arguments week after week after week, and getting paid millions of dollars to do so, and they have zero progress to show for it on the conservative side. Zero. Zero. It is really disgusting. I wish just one of these people did a little bit of introspection for once. But I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. Good to be back to the microphone after 3 days off. But like I said, I won't be on this coming Friday either. But my buddy Dave sent me this article, and I don't know if I would have seen it. Probably would have eventually, I suppose. But he sent it to me yesterday. There is a rumor going on out there, and as a guy who did not vote for Donald Trump, and as a guy who ditched Breitbart.com once they started showing their nationalist tendencies and Steve Bannon was running things before he got involved with Donald Trump's campaign, there is the rumor out there that Steve Bannon may be taking over the Heritage Foundation. And the Jim DeMint, former senator, might be on his way out. I don't know how long he's been in that position. I'm going to say 4 years, maybe? Something like that. Can't remember. But that is the rumor that is going on out there. And this would be a big deal. Because the Heritage Foundation is supposed to be a conservative organization. Steve Bannon is not conservative. He might happen upon a conservative idea once in a while, but I think we know by this time what makes Steve Bannon tick. Now, it may be that he seems like he's conservative compared to Jared Kushner, being in the last few weeks, it seems those two have been at each other, and who's going to have more control and of Donald Trump and then Rance Priebus is in all of that. But the only reason Steve Bannon looks conservative compared to Jared Kushner is because Jared Kushner is such a wacko liberal. And that's what he is. That is who Donald Trump's son-in-law is. And it's really who Donald Trump's daughter is as well, Ivanka Trump. They're crazy kook liberals. And my attitude toward this, I don't like it. Just for a matter of policy and real-world implications, I don't like it. I wouldn't like that. That Steve Bannon, I wouldn't like it if he were to head up that organization. But from a standpoint of me getting something else right, you know, something else I got right, by the way, that I forgot to mention. Remember that last week when the senators all showed up at the White House? Didn't I tell you this is just a big reality TV show, nothing serious was going to come from it? Didn't I tell you that? It was just a photo op. Did I not make that clear to you? And that's all it really was. I told you. Last week, senators are going up. It must be something serious. We may be sending nuclear missiles. It's nothing. This is a reality show to Donald Trump. It's nothing. Told you. But now getting back to this, Steve Bannon. What first occurs to me regarding all of this is an argument that so many conservatives made before Donald Trump got elected. We have to, yes, we know that Donald Trump isn't conservative. Yes, we know this. And yes, we know that. And yes, we know this. And yes, we know that. But dang it, we need a good, and we, but if Hillary gets elected, she's going to get to nominate somebody to the Supreme Court, and we know that's going to be like the next 100 years. And then we have to elect Donald Trump because we'll get that, he'll pick somebody on that one list, and everybody think will be great, and that's what's, how's that feeling right about now? So after Neil Gorsuch is now on the Supreme Court. He's an official Supreme Court justice, just like the other eight now. But then you're going to have Steve Bannon running the Heritage Foundation. You got Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump's just, I guess you could say, the Bill and Hillary Clinton of Donald Trump's family. And they're not that Jared Kushner has ever been accused of rape or anything, but you know what I mean. You're going to have that. You're going to have Sean Hannity selling out and talking well about trade barriers and getting in the, you know, and fighting against China economically. And you're going to have Rush Limbaugh excusing that the wall is not going to be built. And we know if it's never going to be built. And if it is, American taxpayers are going to pay for it. And it's going to be a boondoggle and all of this stuff. All these promises that aren't going to get kept. All of these good conservative institutions that may very well end up being run by Trump cronies by the end of it. Is that Neil Gorsuch pick really going to make you sleep well at night? This is something else that I tried to tell. I don't like being correct. I do. I love being correct. That is not true. I love being right about things. Because the reason is not for my own ego. I don't need that for my own ego. You know why I like being right? Because it shows that I have a good handle on reality and what's going on out there. That's the only reason. I like to understand what's going on in the world, and that's why I like being right. Because when you are wrong, then that shows maybe you missed something. Maybe you don't perfectly understand what is going on. And I guess the best example would be this prior election where Donald Trump won. I still don't feel too much bad about that because a lot of people who follow that stuff and polls and everything much more than I do got it wrong as well. I'll live. But generally, the reason I like being right is because then it means I have a good grasp of a situation. I understand it. And understanding is very important to me in my life. That's why I like being right. Not because I like to feel smarter than other people. Trust me, I wish everybody were getting things right in the world. It would make it a lot easier on me. It's not like I want to be right and I want everybody to be wrong so I can stand on a pedestal and say how stupid all of you are. That is not me. That's not the way I think. But I tried to make this point last year before Donald Trump got elected that with those articles out there, yeah, he may get some things wrong, but you know what? He's going to get some things right. Well, what are those things exactly? If you know what he's going to get right and what he's going to get wrong, you're the one who is saying that, then you tell me what the right things are going to be, you tell me what the wrong things are going to be, and then I'll get to determine whether they truly equal each other out. You know, it doesn't matter how many things he gets right if then on the other hand he decides, you know what, we're just going to go in and start a major war with North Korea and missiles and tanks and everything. And they start shooting missiles into South Korea and over to Japan and into Russia and doing this and doing that. There's nothing, as much as I think North Korea shouldn't exist the way it is, there is nothing that he could do in a conservative direction that could make up for that. Not in Ed's world. There's nothing. So this is why that argument, he'll get some things right and he'll get some things wrong, has never flown with me at all. If you think you know that, then you tell me that. And I'll get to decide that for myself. You know, if you're going to say that your argument, well, yes, you know what, he probably is going to be a little friendlier with Planned Parenthood because of the way his daughter feels about Planned Parenthood. And she went over there and talked to them and but then on the other hand, you're going to get a wall. Well, what happens if I don't get that wall? Of course, as you know, I never believed this wall is ever going to happen. And it's never going to have the effect that everybody thinks it's going to. But we do see that Planned Parenthood is going to continue to exist. It's going to continue to get federal funds. And it's so, am I supposed to be happy about that? Is that just something that went wrong? I just want to know. You said, yes, 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 he's going to do the trade barrier thing. But you know what? The GDP in the United States, you watch. As soon as he becomes president, it's going to skyrocket. Well, did you see the recent GDP report? The economy progressed at the lowest rate in 3 years, 0.7% in the first quarter of 2017. Now, I know that Donald Trump or any president who would come and couldn't work miracles overnight. And the different, a change of attitude. I understand that. And even Ronald Reagan in his time, you know, the economy, you know, it's a little bit of revisionist history. People think, well, as soon as he got in there, everything started changing. It didn't. It took a couple years. And I would say halfway through his first term, his reelection prospects weren't looking so great. But in those 1983, 1984, things changed. And it continued on that way for a long time. Long time. So I know that it takes time, but I'm not the person who said that. He was the, you know, Ronald Reagan never promised anything overnight. He never promised anything. He knew it was going to take time, and he always stuck by, yep, it's going to just take some time. Donald Trump was the one that said things were going to change overnight, and they haven't. Now, did he mean it, or was that just a marketing line? I just want to know. So when you were telling me, you watch, as soon as he becomes president, this economy is just going to turn around. We're going to go at like 5% GDP increase, like 5% a month. The economy is going to progress. GDP is going to go through the roof. We're going to do this. We're going to well, what if it doesn't? Because it seems to me so far is that we're getting all of the bad stuff and we're not getting a lot of the good stuff. I hear about how these regulations are going to be rolled back and this executive order was rescinded and everything else. Instead, I see an economy at 0.7%. I hear about how Obamacare is going to get repealed and Donald Trump made all this news about it. Where did that AHCA thing go? Nowhere. Why? Because it really wasn't a replacement. It was just something by a different, Obamacare by a different name. You know. Hey, all of you are the ones who chose to go along with the stripper. You were the ones who said, oh, yeah, she's going to still dance, yes. But, she's going to be married to me. She's going to be a good wife, too. Well, now we're at that point where, well, she's not coming home when she's supposed to be coming home. She said her shift was from 8 till 2 in the morning, but she's not getting home till 6 in the morning. And she's not giving any reason why. Yeah, she's coming home, and she's being friendly to you and everything else. But then she's not supposed to work till 8, but she's leaving for work at 6, and it's only like a 20-minute drive. And you start seeing, you're not checking her phone yet, but you're hearing her phone ring and she's not answering. She looks at it but doesn't pick up, and then 15 minutes later she goes to the bathroom and takes her phone with her. Hey, all of you are the ones who chose to marry the stripper. I cover it, do another show, a missing person show, where a couple exotic dancers have disappeared. I want to try to help those families find those people. That's important to me. All right, but we're talking about something in a different context. As much as I want those women's cases solved, in the real world, generally, if you want to have a good marriage, you're probably better off staying away from strippers, at least if they're currently strippers. If they were strippers 10 years ago, that's something different. Even 5 years ago, something different. But right now, given the kind of atmosphere and environment and what goes on there, you're probably better off as a single guy to stay away. You can be friendly with them. You want to be friends with the strippers. You want to, you run into them at the Publix, you'd be nice and everything. You'd be kind and thoughtful and everything else. Probably that's not somebody that you want to get into a serious relationship with. You were the ones who chose to get into a relationship with Donald Trump. I did not. I just have to live with it. And if I were to run into Donald Trump, I'm not sure what I would do. I don't know how nice I would be. I wouldn't yell at him or swear at him or anything. I'd try to have a decent political conversation with him. I'm sure he wouldn't want to listen to me. He'd make fun of me and get on Twitter. I talked to this idiot in Madeira Beach doing this podcast that he would say nobody listens to on this channel that nobody's ever heard of. And that's how he would treat me. I would not treat him the same way. But once again, he's in that environment. That's who he is. So, getting back to Steve Bannon running the Heritage Foundation, is that what you conservatives want now? Is that good enough for you? You got Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, but now Steve Bannon, a white nationalist, going to head the Heritage Foundation, probably an organization you've been sending money to over the decades. How you feel about that? I'm glad I've never sent them any money. And all this going on, who's pulling Donald Trump's behind the strings? When it's all done, and none of your conservative stuff got handled, and the GDP in the United States continues ahead at 1%, is that Neil Gorsuch thing really going to be so great? Or would it have been better just saying, hypothetical situation, Hillary Clinton becomes president, Jim DeMint stays as head of the Heritage Foundation. You have a Congress that's still Republican, but then is in much more of an adversarial atmosphere with the president. They probably wouldn't let Hillary Clinton do anything. She might get her Supreme Court nominee. Maybe not if the Senate was still run by the Republicans. What do you think? It's almost a wash in my mind. I told you that I believed that if Donald Trump became president, that conservatism would suffer. Just would. People start changing the definition. People start changing what they think about things. Suddenly Donald Trump, you start defining him as a conservative, and he's not. Suddenly Steve Bannon, who's not a conservative, is heading up the Heritage Foundation. Conservative spokespeople and media types all over the spectrum defending Donald Trump, even though if it had been Barack Obama doing it, that attack it. And now Donald Trump probably going to blame conservatives, Republicans going to blame the 0.7% GDP on Barack Obama. Meanwhile, we made fun of Barack Obama when he was blaming everything on George W. Bush. It's also ugly and disgusting, and it's amazing how people can act like a bunch of 8-year-olds. And I don't like it. I don't take part in it. I just don't. That's why it's America's conservative podcast. It's not America's Republican podcast. It's not America's nationalist podcast. It's not America's populist podcast. It's America's conservative podcast, and that's what I worry about the most. Because I believe it's the only way, it's the only ideology that works. Everything else doesn't work. On that topic, I want to move to something else. And this was something that was written at redstate.com. It was written by J.D. Rucker, who, of course, has the website, thenewamericana.com. But he, I think, was commenting on something that was in the Washington Post about how already in this new Congress, with the Republicans having a majority in the House, majority in the Senate, that there are compromises and the two sides are working together on probably a few too many things. Even though, getting the AHCA, for example, liberals bellyached, complained and everything about it. But I'm telling you, behind the scenes in some cigar room somewhere, they're saying to each other, whew, man, that could have been way worse. They made fun of it in public, but behind the scenes, they were thinking, man, if they're going to repeal Obamacare, if this is the best we could do, then, man, we got nothing to worry about. That's what I think was really going on behind the scenes. But J.D. Rucker, in this article at redstate.com, points out that, and it's something that I've said for a long time, is that there's a reason that we as conservatives, we don't believe in compromise. It's because compromise, you get what the Republicans get what they want, Democrats get what they want, is not really good government. I know that after all of these years in our civics classes, going back, I think I had civics when I was in eighth grade, we talk about how bills get passed and they get altered and they get rescinded and then they get rewritten and they go to committee and the bill becomes a only bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill Sunday morning cartoons regarding that. But compromise is horrible. And dare I say it, I am a conservative who wishes that liberals would stick to their guns more. I wish that liberals would be less willing to compromise. And in fact, something like Obamacare, which has hurt me personally. I've lost, four plans now, and the costs continue to go up. But I think that when liberals don't compromise, I think that it shows who they are. And I think that when people, your average person, is inflicted, gets inflicted with liberalism, the person doesn't like it, even though up to that point they say nice things about it. The problem is, I don't know if we conservatives, we are as unwilling to compromise. And this, I think the AHCA is a perfect example of that. That what we have, the way the federal government is, all of this, these regulations and tax, I talked about the tax code last week, tax cuts versus tax reform. All of this, since the beginning, is a series of compromises. You cannot say that the federal government is overtly liberal. You cannot say that it is overtly conservative. It is a mixture of both, and that's what gets you to the debt that we are in. It's honor among thieves about people who would rather get bills passed, to become laws, than actually sticking to any principles and saying, you know what, if we can't do it, then we're just going to do it. We're just going to sit here. You're going to sit on that side of the room. We're going to sit on this side of the room, and we'll just twiddle our thumbs for the next 2 years or 4 years or 6 years or whatever. And I have to tell you, as a conservative, I would be perfectly fine with that. If the federal government came out today and said, you know what, we're not passing another law, another regulation for the next 100 years, you would see the GDP in the United States go up to about 10% within a few months. Because then everybody would realize, okay, we're going to be working under these rules for the next 100 years. I can deal with that. The problem is, we have an intrusive government that conservatives allow, that Republicans allow, the liberals want, that is their main goal, and it holds everybody back. I've made this, I can't say that that argument is exactly original. This attitude that really holds the United States back economically isn't necessarily the current laws that are on the books. What holds us back are the prospect of more of them and more weird taxes and weirder ways to tax people and regulate people and tariffs and fees and everything else. It's a very interesting argument and one that I happen to buy into. But because these lawmakers think that they are there to, and here I am calling them lawmakers, these politicians think it's their job to make laws is the problem. Because what ends up happening in the end is they want their law, that side wants their law passed, this side wants their law passed. Probably both of them could use a lot of important, but we get those things because they compromise. Okay, we'll vote for yours if you vote for mine. That's how we get to where we are. And so that's why I've told all of you, if you ever get into a conversation with, I don't care if it's a liberal conservative who's starts talking about, well, we need to compromise and everything else, you just reassure them, well, you know, the federal government, the way it sits now, is a series of compromises. We know how much you love that. Do you think that they haven't been compromising the last 200 years? Actually, they have been. That's what gets us to the problems that we have now. How about for once just somebody stand up and say, no, I'm not going to compromise. We're just not going to do that. We're just going to sit here for the next 2-4 years, however long it takes, and we're just not going to do anything. I'd love to hear that out of Congress, and I'd love to hear that out of the president. I have to be honest. I got to go. EdwardDensel.com is the website. USA Podcast is my Twitter feed, and you can find this program Tuesday through Saturday, I guess. Is that the new time now? 2 a.m. Eastern. Also on Google, on Podomatic and iTunes, my other show, Unfound. You can also find it on Podomatic and iTunes. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.